Good morning. It's the great feast of Corpus Christi, which is a feast that goes back 800 years in the church. There was a German priest who was traveling from Germany down to Rome, and he was a priest who had been having incredible struggles in his faith. And one of the things he had been really struggling with is believing, even as a priest, believing that the hosts during Mass truly become the body and blood of Christ. But he was still faithful in saying Mass and saying his prayers. And on his way to Rome, he stopped in this little town, Bolsena. And while he was celebrating Mass there, and after he said the words of consecration, "This is my body," the host in his hand, as he held it up, began to bleed. And the blood from this host came down upon the corporal that was there. And that host and the corporal, one could still go see them today in Bolsena and Orvieto. And it was following this Eucharistic miracle that the church began 800 years ago, this feast of Corpus Christi, celebrated every year, this feast of the body and blood of Jesus. But of course, the belief in the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist doesn't just go back 800 years, it goes back to the time of Christ. And the earliest Christian writers, when they were writing about the faith and describing what it is that they believe and do, they're very explicit about what it is that they believe about the Eucharist. St. Justin Martyr, writing just 100 years after Jesus' death, explaining to one of the emperors what we Christians do when we come together on Sundays, he said, "What we consume is not ordinary bread or wine, but we believe, as Jesus told us, it is the true body, it is the true blood of Jesus that we take into our own body and our blood." And all the readings point to the sacrifices of old, where the blood, which was sacrificed to bring reconciliation, to bring us into covenant with God, has now been fulfilled, not with the sacrifice of lambs or goats, but with the sacrifice of Jesus himself. Do you know why I'm called a priest, and not simply Pastor Shay or Minister Shay, but I'm a priest? Because what priests do from the Old Testament until today is they offer sacrifice. And it's the sacrifice that I offer here on this altar. And we receive Jesus' body and blood into our own. When you were younger, did any of you, you know, where you cut your thumb and your friend cut their thumb and you joined them together and you became blood brothers, blood sisters? Some of you have done that, right? I know you have. Younger people are like, "What are you talking about?" So you would cut your thumbs and you would join the blood together with someone who is a close friend of yours. And then when your blood has mixed, when you receive their blood into your own and they've received your blood, you're now family. You're blood brothers. You're blood sisters. This is what happens for us in the Eucharist. We receive Jesus' blood and his body into our own blood and body, and we become family with him. I want to tell you two stories on this Corpus Christi Sunday. One is a story of hatred, and the other is a story of love. And when it comes to the Eucharist, either you should hate the Eucharist or you should love it. Please just don't be indifferent. I think it's far worse being indifferent to the Eucharist. Have a hatred for it or love it. Have a hatred for it to your own peril. But I want to tell you the story of hatred first. Father Andrew Trapp is a priest in the Diocese of Charleston, South Carolina. And he tells a story when he was a seminarian. He had spent a summer in France at a parish. And one of the things that he was given as a responsibility was to lead the young adults group, which met every week. And at the very end of the summer, at their last meeting, one of the young men who had been there every week, Nicholas, shared with the group how much he had grown in his faith over that summer. And he explained that when he was in his teenage years into his mid-20s, he was a practicing Satanist. He had a hard youth growing up, and he was angry. He was filled with despair and hatred, and he was suicidal. And in the midst of all this, he got tangled up very deeply with Satanism. And he was sharing the grace of how much he had grown in his love for Christ, even just over that summer. After the meeting, Andrew went right over to him, to Nicholas, because he had said he had never met a Satanist. And so he said he bombarded him with questions. He had three big questions he wanted to talk to him about. The first is he asked him, how do Satanists worship? Like when you come together as Satanists, how do you worship? And Nicholas said, they don't have like an image of Satan that they come and bow down to. They don't have like a Satanist Bible per se that they come and they have like a Bible study. What do you think of this passage? I don't know. This is what I'm... They don't have that. They don't have where someone so much preaches a word throughout the service. What they have is a black mass. The way that Satan works is he always mocks that which is holy, that where God is. And what they do when they come together to worship is they have a black mass which is mocking directly the Catholic Mass. The second question that Andrew asked him is, he said, I've heard that Satanists will go to Catholic Masses and they'll take communion. And they'll take it out, not receive it, but they'll take it. And that's what they'll use at the black masses, the consecrated hosts. And Nicholas said, yes, that's right. That they'll go to masses and take the hosts. And that's what they use as the center of their worship at a black mass. This is why it's so important. We're priests and deacons and Eucharistic ministers. We get incredible peripheral vision. I'm always watching as someone receives communion to make sure that they're receiving the host, that they're not just, as I've had a couple times, nothing here yet, where people will take the host and they'll just sort of walk off back to the pew. And almost every time, it's been where they just didn't know any better. Maybe it's their first time, they didn't know what to do. And so I'll have to go up behind them and say, sir, madam, I have to have that host back and then get the host back from them. It's why as well that there's such an insistence that someone needs to be in the state of grace. They need to be in good standing with the Catholic Church to receive the Eucharist. It's why there's such an importance stressed on receiving the Eucharist with reverence, that we don't just come and take it, but we receive it with an incredible reverence, either as you see the small pelicans doing at the medallion where communion is distributed, receiving by their tongue, the mother pelican will give of its own flesh to its children when they're starving, as Jesus gives us his own flesh. So we either receive reverently by the tongue, or we receive by making a throne. St. Cyril says you're to make a throne with your hands, to receive a king, and then we step to the side and we consume him right away. Because these hosts which are taken, they take them because they really believe it's Jesus, which gets to the last question that Andrew asked him. He said, okay, so I've heard that Satanists who are deep into it, that they're able to tell the difference between a host that's consecrated and one that's not. Because you know, these hosts that we use, you can go online. Any of you can go online. If you know how to use a computer or credit card, you could buy them. But they don't want those. Nicholas said, yes, you can tell, and I could when I was a practicing Satanist, the difference, I could tell the difference between a host that was consecrated and one that wasn't. You could line up 10 hosts before me, and I could tell you which one had been consecrated and is now Jesus. And Andrew said, how? Nicholas told him, because of the hatred. Because I would feel a burning hatred toward that specific host. And I knew that that's the one that was consecrated. Satanists believe in the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist. They believe that he's truly there. But their response to that is hatred. Pure hatred. So what they do at a black mass is they do the inversion of what we do. At our mass, after the consecration, Jesus is lifted up, and he's lifted up for adoration. What they do is they take the host, and they take and they throw him down upon the ground, and they spit and defecate upon him and all sorts of awful things, and they stomp upon him. The complete inversion of what we do in worshiping God, instead it comes out as this pure hatred and mockery of God. Now a story of love. One of my classmates in seminary, I went to the North American College, which we had Australians there. Try and figure that out. So a British friend of mine said that they should call the place the College of Former British Colonies because it's Americans, Canadians, and Australians. So my friend from Australia, Father Michael Gallagher, when he was ordained a priest, he had a beautiful prayer card made, and he had this incredible moving image on the front of it called The First Catholics in Sydney, Australia. And I asked him, what's the story behind this? And he told me the story of the early Catholics in Australia, which I was completely ignorant about. Australia, you know, was settled by convicts. The British Empire would take their convicts and send them off and let them loose in this land all the way across the world in Australia. And the first ship of convicts landed in Australia in 1788. And on board, there were a couple hundred Catholics. Now, many of these convicts were Irish. Surprise, surprise. They didn't, you know, we don't always get along with the British so well. So the Irish bishops begged and pleaded for them to allow Catholic priests into Australia to minister to these Catholics. Every year, they pleaded with the British, and for 15 years, they said no. And so the Catholics there had no sacraments whatsoever. Finally, in 1803, three Catholics were sent to Australia as convicts, and they allowed one of them, Father James Dixon, to go around to the Catholics there, who now numbered 1,700, to go around and to bring the sacraments to them. And so he went around and he baptized, and he brought them, he had mass for them, he brought them communion, he heard their confessions. After that first year, though, the British stomped down on that and didn't allow it, and so for 4 years, he and the other two priests in private said masses and brought the sacraments to the people before finally they said, we've had enough of this. And so they just took the troublesome priests and they sent them back to England. And then for 12 years, from 1808 to 1820, there was not a single mass celebrated in the whole continent of Australia. We went last spring for about 6 weeks without mass. Imagine 12 years. Father Dixon knew this would probably happen, though. And so in the homes, before they were sent back, they had left a couple hosts, consecrated ones. And every Sunday, in different homes around Australia, families would gather, and they would have a host in a pyx like this. And they would bring it out, they would light a couple candles, place it upon a table, and they would just sit there before the Eucharist and pray. They would sit before the Eucharist in longing and in love. And they would teach their kids the faith. And that's what this image of the first Catholics of Sydney is. I'll post it on our parish's Facebook page so you can see it. It's an image of a couple families in this home kneeling before the Eucharist, just love pouring forth from their hearts. Because what was it? What was it that kept those Australian families faithful for 12 years before finally, in 1820, they allowed priests to come finally to Australia and serve them? But for 12 years, what was it that kept them faithful? What is it that keeps you faithful? That keeps you faithfully coming weekly to receive Jesus in the Eucharist? It would have been a lot easier for them, for the Australians, to just become Anglican, who they were having services every Sunday in public. Here we are, and thank God that we have religious freedom and we're able to do this. And you're able to come freely anytime to Mass. A lot of Sundays it's probably easier not to. But yet here you are in faith. It's belief, yes, that Jesus is really truly there in the Blessed Sacrament. It's belief, but even more, it's love. It's love which kept them keeping the faith. It's love which brings you here faithfully to receive him. Both Satanists and believing Catholics believe in the real presence. They believe he's there. One of their response is hatred. The other one is love. How does that love grow inside your heart? Like it does with any other person. Through talking with them. From heart to heart. Really talking with someone. Praying. On this Corpus Christi Sunday, we're making a change. One of the things that's going to change is after you've received Jesus in communion, when you go back to your pews, there'll be music playing, but we're not going to have any hymns. Instead of hymns that we're singing, to go back to your pew and to pray, to speak to Jesus, your heart to his and his to yours. We'll still on Greater Feast, Christmas, Easter, have hymns, but to allow this time instead for that love of Jesus in your heart to continue to grow, this love for him truly present in the Blessed Sacrament, the Eucharist.